Welcome to Every Step Podcast. I'm Christina Weston.
And I'm Judith Beck.
Every Step is the podcast where career and life meet.
Hi, Christina. It's so good to be here. And I'm looking forward to today's conversation because, you know, it's one of the things that we've all had to overcome in our careers, and that's fear.
Yeah.
How do we take fear how do we get rid of fear, but also how do we take that on board when we want to be an entrepreneur? And what are the things? You've had to do that several times.
Yeah. It's the classic feel the fear and do it anyway, right? It's, I'm not sure we ever actually get rid of fear, but it's how we turn it into our friend rather than our enemy. It's about embracing it, acknowledging it, but doing things anyway. And you talked about entrepreneurship, Judith. I think that's a really big issue in terms of, are people gutsy enough and resilient enough to be entrepreneurs now? Are we creating a generation of young people that are going to be a little concerned about stepping out and doing something different in terms of setting up their own businesses? Because it takes a lot of guts. It takes a lot of facing your fears. It takes a lot of people are going to be naysayers and say, you can't do it, it's not possible. And all the people that have been successful are the people that went, I don't care, I'm going to do it anyway.
You know, and I think because there are so many blockers out there that they have to contend with. When we were starting our businesses, we just kind of went, let's just do it. And we did. And when I think back, okay, if I was doing it today and I was in my early 20s or my late 20s, would it have been easier? Yeah, it definitely would have been easier from a tech point of view, a logistic point of view, a process point of view. That part, nail it. I could start a business in a week, you know. But what about the connections, the sales side of it, the customer service thing? All that is very important. And really, at the end of the day, I think that, you know, the generations that are coming up that are going to be entrepreneurs are not getting that part of the most important process. They can set the business up, but is the business going to be viable in the long term? Because they don't have the connections. They're not out there meeting people. They're not, the soft skills are not there like they used to be. You know, they've got very strong skills in some areas, but they're not getting the exposure to the mentors and the advocates and seeing. See, one of the things that I saw when I was very young and I was working in a business, I saw what not to do. Because I saw I was working for a boss who did things the way I didn't think they should be done. And so I actually was there in the office seeing what not to do, how not to treat people, how not to do, you know, things. And I also saw from the good managers what they were doing, and I physically could watch them do that. So that helped alleviate some of my fear starting my own business, because I already witnessed that. But if you're going to start a business and you haven't had any of that exposure, you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest issues as an entrepreneur, and certainly I've got a lived experience of this, is that resilience piece. It's, you know, you can have all the work stuff done and sorted. A lot of it's, you know, you get your processes right and everything else, but it's the emotional journey that you go on. And it's the riding the downs, because you, trust me, there are way more downs than there are ups. And it's how you cope with that and how you bring the rest of your team along for that journey. And a lot of it is facing fears, fear of failure, fear that I won't make it, fear that I've done the wrong thing, fear that I've chosen the wrong path. Maybe this isn't my path after all. So much self-doubt comes in when you're an entrepreneur on that journey.
Exactly. And also, There, people today are seeing other people, so-called being successful, and they're comparing themselves in their entrepreneurial journey, and that's putting sort of a spanner in the works, and that might knock them back a few pegs rather than going, because I can remember, when I had my recruitment business, I never looked at the competition. I said, I don't care what the competition is doing. What are we doing? If we're doing it, that type of thing. Because we, and also, I didn't have that social media
I
pressure.
was going to say, social media has changed the landscape of that.
Exactly.
It is
I
complete because it's
see.
we're comparing ourselves to everybody.
Exactly. And I didn't see the competition. I didn't have to listen to it, see it, have it, have to think about it at night when I went home. Oh, they got that or they did this. Didn't have to do any of that, but they do have to do today.
Yeah.
I'm really excited because we've had a guest pop in today, and he is going to talk all about fear and how to overcome fear. And his name is Brett Solimano, and he is an award-winning, nominated stuntman for film and TV. He's also a coach, and he's an author and speaker, and he spent over 10 years teaching and learning from sports professionals, performers, and athletes the very best tools and techniques for mindfulness, emotional intelligence, and learning. He's worked as a stunt double for Dennis Quaid and Joshua Jackson in shows like The Walking Dead and MacGyver. Who doesn't love MacGyver? Stranger Things, NCIS. And you know what? Being a stuntman is a skill that definitely carries over into the corporate. And the other thing I noticed before I bring Brett in is that he won, or no, he won. He is the Guinness World Record holder for driving a truck backwards for 50, I think I've got this right, 51 kilometers or what. And you know what, Christina, when I saw that, I thought, ah, a Guinness World Record. That's kind of cool. I'm going to see if there's a podcast, Guinness World Record, and check it out. Maybe we can do the longest podcast. And do you know
Oh dear, I'm not sure I'm up for
talk
that.
about fear, the longest podcast is 6 days straight. So I went,
No,
no. So
no, no.
I think with fear, you gotta go, you gotta look and go, no, that's not for me. I'm not
No.
capable of doing that.
I don't know that that's fear-based either. I think that's just I've missed my sleep.
So Brett, welcome. Thanks for joining us all the way from Atlanta, Georgia.
Thanks, guys. Great to be here, and thank you for the lovely introduction. It's always nice to hear my accolades reflected back to me. Sometimes I'm so focused on the future and what I'm doing next that I forget what I've done. So I appreciate the recognition of that, and honored to be here chatting about all things fear and entrepreneurship. Yeah.
So if you look back, if you take what you've done in the corporate world and go, okay, let's say it was the time that you were doing your very first stunt where you could really get hurt. Like, where you knew, okay, if I don't do this right, I'm going, because there's always a first time, isn't there? How did you prepare yourself mentally for that first stunt where you knew that I can get hurt from this?
So, it's interesting because we talk about stunts and we think, what is a stunt? And I think a lot of people have in their mind a big stunt that is, they think of Evel Knievel jumping the Grand Canyon, and that sort of thing. Sometimes stunts are actually a lot more simpler than that, and they look crazy and chaotic and out of control on the films, on the TV shows, but a lot of the times they're actually a bit more refined and performed more precisely, like a well-choreographed ballet on the shows themselves, so there's a bit more organization and preparation than just, well, here, hold my beer, I'm going to jump this thing and hope for the best. But yeah, there's always a first time, as you say, and there's always the opportunity or the need to push your limits in some way. Sometimes stunt performers get a little bit, I don't say hurt, but we treat it like any other athlete going for a gold medal. You really want to push yourself and metaphorically and literally throw yourself into it. So you've got to learn how to look after yourself and look after your body, but also realize that, this is the job and you're going for something that's creative and new every time. So how can you bring what you've already done, and even though it's new, there's still a familiarity there, so you can stay in your safe zone. And when you're in your safe zone, if you're in that familiar spot, even though it looks new, you're playing from a sense of comfortability. So you're not on your edge as much as you might think.
So is it is
there in your mind? Is there something in your mind? Like, do you sort of get in the zone or focus, or like, okay, I got to do this. I've got one take because it's on film. So I would imagine that if you don't do it right, and you have to keep going over and over, they're not real happy with it.
Well, a good thing nowadays, a lot of productions shoot on digital, so we have a bit more luxury to be able to do it multiple times. With that said, when you've got multiple people standing around, big actors, things like that, there's thousands and even millions of dollars getting spent very quickly. So, you know, you've got a couple of rehearsals perhaps to show the crew what you're going to do, and everyone dials it in and gets to see it. And then you've got a couple of takes from there, so you have to get it right. But that preparation, you know, listening to the script and just having an ear to the ground for the conversations that are going on around the set, you know, is it a comedy? Is it more of an action? What style of comedy? Is it a period piece? Do you have to keep it realistic? You know, all these performances, you're creating a character, you're stitching a story together, and you're playing a small part. So how does your part coincide with everything else? And that comes from a lot of visualization skills, you know, and just perceiving things before they're there, as different elements show up, what vehicle you might be driving, or how this character is going to come in and interact with you. Normally we want to stay within our comfort zone, and we're playing, let's say, the top level of our skill is like a 10 out of 10, you know, and that would be something we're just brand new at, we're learning. You know, we never really want to get out of our comfort zone on a performance day more than like 5 or 6, because, you know, then you're taking a risk. There's a risk of embarrassing yourself. You make a bad name for yourself. He wasn't able to do the job. He got someone hurt. He damaged something. And then you create a bad name for yourself, and people don't want to come back and have you come back next time. So you've got to send it like you're creating something new, but you've got to keep inside that comfortability and that mindfulness where you're in the present moment. I'll give you one quick story as well. There was one time where I did a stunt that I'd never done before on a TV show, and I got through doing that because even though I'd never performed the skill physically, I'd visualized it so many times in my mind, and that was sort of the next thing I was working towards. And I told the stunt coordinator, look, I've never done this before, but I know how to do it. You didn't ask me to do that on set today. You asked for something else, but now that's what you want. So I gently pushed the responsibility back on him. And I was able to perform the stunt on the day a few times, get a good reaction, and it sold really well on camera. But again, that was all visualization. I did exactly what I visualized, but it wasn't the skill of the performance and the riding the motorcycle on the day that saved me. It was the skill of the visualization that allowed me to be able to produce that. So a little bit of communication and a whole lot of visualization was the order of the day then. Yeah.
The visualization, I think, is such an important thing, because I kind of think that it's the same thing that you have to use when you're getting on stage and doing a presentation. So you would have had to do that many times as well. And actually, you probably would think that was harder than doing a stunt, because when you have to get on stage and do a presentation, the first time you do it, it is so scary. It is really, and you really do, that visualization is really, I kind of psyched myself out of it by thinking, changing it from I'm scared and fearful to can't wait, this is going to be fun. Like, can't wait to get up there. And, you know, and then, you know, kind of laugh before I go, can't wait to get up there. It's going to be so much fun. There's some fun people out there. You know, I always use that tactic to overcome fear speaking in front of people, because no matter how many times you do it, it's a new experience every time that you get up there in front of people, and you don't know what the result or the how it's going to be taken. So,
you know, absolutely, like, yeah.
Visualizing it and practice. Yeah, I mean, let's not underestimate practice.
Hours and hours of practice.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah, that the Guinness World Record, for example, you know, I never had driven more than 10 laps, which was about 3 miles in one go before, but I did the 55 and a third miles for the world record. And that was in a 53-foot trailer as well. I didn't quite mention that part. I just want to throw that in. So it's a very
crazy.
It's a pretty crazy sort of skill. But there's micro skills in there. I just want to slip that in as well, Judith, because, you know, some people think of practice, I think, that practice is, oh, I have to do it right. You know, I have to get it right. And we strive for perfection every time. But really, and this is something I talk about in my book, A Stuntman's Guide to Learning Anything, I think there's more merit a lot of the time to getting it wrong and dancing around the beat of the music to try and get back onto the beat. And I love what you said there about getting excited as well, Judith, because I love the saying. I got this from Benjamin Harvey from Authentic Education. If you get nervous, focus on service. So don't get stuck in your head with that nervousness. But when you get up on stage, how can I serve these people? How can I tune in and give them what they want? And instead of getting stuck to a 90-minute keynote that you've written and recited word for word 100 times, how can I roll with the punches? If people are loving it, how can I give them more of that? If people are a bit stuck or sticky, how can I pull them out of themselves and dance with the energy and the ideas that I have in the room? So there's a few things there as well, for sure. And practice is a whole other conversation for another podcast as well, perhaps. Yeah.
I love that, because it's kind of like even being, you know, a new entrepreneur going into something for the first time. It doesn't always work the first time. So it's kind of like, and then and not worrying about that everything has to be perfect the first time, but learning from whatever it is. And if this isn't working, well, then what can we do to fix it and to improve it and not be discouraged to the point where they give up? And I think that's probably something that entrepreneurs, new entrepreneurs, you know, really have to look at. And that's why I think I worry about what that will look like in 10 years, because part of the of being an entrepreneur, when I was going, is having support and having and knowing people who I could bounce ideas off of, who had more experience. And, you know, you have advocates and mentors and stuff like that. And I just wonder whether or not the new generations are going to have enough of that to be able to do that, to be able to, you know, handle looking into the audience and how do I service them, because they haven't they haven't, you know, really practiced it with anyone. They haven't bounced it off anybody, or they haven't really discussed. You can't learn that in a book.
Yeah, it's kind of like the fear of failure, but you need to do it. You need to go ahead and do it, because you learn more from your mistakes often than you do from the things that go really well, because the things that go really well are easy usually. You know, it's the failure. It's the mistakes you make. It's the missteps. Where you learn the most. And yeah, we need to build a culture of it's okay not to come first or second, and you don't have to get a medal or an award or whatever if you've come last. You came last, and you've got to be okay with coming last, because that'll build you, you know, if you're in the right environment, the right culture, it'll hopefully build you to actually improve yourself.
You know, that's
I'm reading things going on at the moment culturally, I think.
Exactly. I'm reading this book and it's called Gan Bat by Hector Garcia. It's part of the Ikigai series, and it's about moving forward. And one of the things that they said in the book was taking a loss. In other words, sometimes it's better to take a small loss than have to win. And it was kind of like talking about from a customer point of view, give the customer a little bit, because that might be a big win, rather than no, I have to win, and upsetting the customer, right? That you're going to lose. And, you know, I think that there's a lot to be learned in those types of, when I said you can't learn that in a book, I didn't mean don't read books, because you should, as an entrepreneur, read as much as you possibly can, but also have those people in your corner and have that network to talk about real life examples and how to face, especially fear, because I think fear is probably the thing that's going to stop every stage of the process. You might get the business going and you might get it up and running and have the best website and everything else, but then something doesn't happen. And then you get fearful and you give up too soon.
So let's chat about
Absolutely, yeah.
practical stuff that we can do to overcome fear, because we've all been in scenarios where we've had to deal with fear. I'll use one in my personal life. I took up ocean swimming a number of years ago, and I was really afraid of waves. And I used to actually hyperventilate when I saw waves. I had a near drowning issue years and years when I was little. And I just have this visceral response to waves. And the number of people that are very similar to me, it's an amazing ocean swimming group. I'm not living in that area anymore. It's in Manly. It's a regular swim. It's the group called the Bold and Beautiful. If anyone's interested in it, there's a great book by Julia Baird on phosphorescence that she writes about the experience of dealing with your fears. But the transformation of people who were scared and we're afraid of either swimming a distance or the sharks or all the manifestations in your brain that we come up with that are going to stop us from doing it. People from as young as, 8, 9, 10 through to in their 90s have participated in this. And you watch the personal transformation of these humans from when they were, I'm not going to do this, to when they conquer it. Their self-esteem goes through the roof. It's just phenomenal to watch. And I mean, that's a personal life example of people dealing with fear and the benefits of it. But let's chat about how do you conquer it to actually improve yourself to get ahead? Because there is a process effectively, or a series of things that we have to do.
Yeah, I look at fear like any other muscle. I think it's not spoken about. I think people speak about fear as like, oh, it's this barrier and this demon, this darkness, this shadow that I have to overcome. But really, it's just an internal object that we have to overcome, and we have to lift that object like any other muscle, by lifting it just like any other muscle, But we talk about, well, I've got to go for a run to have my cardio or swim or whatever, as you say, Christina. But we don't talk enough about the muscle of overcoming fear. And that's something that I do in my Momentum Mastery program. We overcome one little fear every day for a month, and we build this habit of, okay, I got to talk to a stranger. I got to try a new food. I got to have a cold shower. A lot of people say, well, maybe some of that's easy, but it's this repetition of, okay, where's the edge of my comfort zone? Let's hit that every day, and realize that that's now the goal, is to hit that edge of our comfort zone. Because I think so many people, young people, old people, they get comfortable. They get in a relationship. They stop dating each other. They just get in a relationship and they're comfortable. They get a job and they think, oh, I've got a paycheck. I just have to show up at 9 a.m. every day and I'm all good. But I don't want people to do that. I want people to keep growing and keep challenging themselves and keep looking for that comfort zone. Because if you just take one step or just overcome a little fear every day, imagine what you could do in a full year. And the comfortability and the willingness that you would have to push past your comfort zone at the end of the year by doing a little bit of that every day, it's just mind-blowing, some of the testimonials I get. It's so magical to see people get out of their comfort zone like that. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think from, when you're starting a company and you're in a company, you have to, one, yes, you have to face your fear of doing that, but you also have to accept what you're great at and accept what you're not so great at. So, it's like, I knew that when I started my business, I was good at sales. I was good at opening doors and closing sales, but when it came to the administration and the processes and that kind of stuff, I knew I needed to know it, but I knew I wasn't the best at it, and the tech side.
I was going to
So
say, and the tech.
I know enough about it to have common sense, and I know how to run it, but I'm not a programmer and I don't want to be. And so, yeah, so as an owner of a business, you got to know what you're good at, what you're not good at, and what you're not interested in. You still need to know how it works, but you need to accept that you need help and that you get people who are better at it than you are, get them in the business to do that and take over that process so that you can focus on the ideas and the business and the leadership and that type of thing. And I think that is overcoming a fear in itself, because a lot of entrepreneurs, when they start a business, have a fear that someone will make a mistake in my business if I don't do it myself. If I don't micromanage every single person that works here, then what happens if somebody makes a mistake? And, you know, it's going to impact on the business. And they're so fearful of making a mistake and letting somebody else do it that they try to do everything themselves. And that's not the way to do it. You got to let go. You got to be prepared. And you got to be prepared to get over that fear of your people making a mistake. As long as you make a mistake, well, what have they learned from it? And have you trained them properly? Do they have the right
information,
tools?
Yeah, I think it's really good when you're starting a business of any kind as well to just focus on the easy wins and the low-hanging fruit too. Because I think we all get excited when we start a business. Oh, I'm going to start a business and $1 million check and all that kind of stuff. And then you realize you're actually probably in the first year going to make less than what you were making the year before in your job. But that's not why you do it. You want the long-term success and opportunities and that sort of thing. But we don't make it easy. We don't make it simple. And I'm a big fan of simple, a big fan of systems and keeping it light and easy early on, because the emotional roller coaster is a big one for businesses. You know, we get fired up on the all the good stuff that we see on TikTok and, oh, I can be that. Absolutely, you can. But people rarely show the darkness and the dark side that they experience in the entrepreneurial journey as well. So we have to make it easy, keep it simple, keep emotionally neutral, a little bit excited, a little bit motivated the whole way through, a little bit inspired, and just keep focusing on the work, because as we get better at that work, we can gently outsource things and pass things off and work with people. But it's very hard to have a lot of steep learning curves in a lot of new skills in a lot of different areas all at once. So stick with what you're good at, I say, and just focus on one new skill at a time as we grow.
Now, you went from Melbourne to Atlanta 8 years ago, and that's an unknown, that's a huge jump. That's, you know,
absolutely.
Atlanta.
Right. I'll even add that I went to Los Angeles for 18 months in between, and there's a whole other story there. But just figuring everything out, I thought I'd be able to sort of just step in and get stuff done. But, you know, how people qualify prospects here is totally different. You know, what is valuable to them? What makes people laugh is very different. Religion, the perception of God and all these different things, it's all different over here. And even though we speak English in Australia and America, obviously accents are different, just nuances are different. And it was a huge learning curve, far more than I ever thought. And every couple of weeks, there was something that was blowing my mind about the differences in culture. I lived in a van for about 18 months in Los Angeles as well. There's a whole other story there. But that was a good way to get out of my comfort zone and get immersed in the culture. Just so many little things, so many little things that I had to learn, how to speak to people and ask for what I want. Yeah, it's a crazy culture jump, more than what people think.
Do people ask for what they want more in the US than they do in Australia? Are we culturally here a little bit more reserved? Or is
it's very hard to generalize 300 million people, you know, a third of a billion people in the US. So I know someone, I may trigger somebody at some point if I say something that's too generalized, but I do find that Americans are a bit more bold, and Australians are a bit more happy to speak their mind publicly, I think. And we can talk about where that might come from, tall poppy syndrome, you know, the early entrepreneurs and pioneers that came to those countries to set them up. The other summary that I find is very true, that in America, it's a little bit easier to get ahead, but it's easier to fall behind. And I think in Australia, it's harder to get ahead, but it's harder to fall behind. I think with a smaller population, it's much more homogenized and middle class and safe in Australia. So I can speak to that. But double-edged sword everywhere. And, you know, for every generalization, there's a specialization, and it's very hard to speak to everyone, I think. Yeah.
It's very, I always looked at in the States, like each state is like a different country.
It's like, oh, absolutely. That's what I was told. Yeah.
Each state is a different yep. culture. And going from LA to Atlanta, that would be, seriously, you might as well come to Australia.
You might as well come. That's right. Yeah. California has, you know, it's very dry, like Melbourne or Sydney might be. And Atlanta's very green, all the pine trees. It's very humid here. Totally different culturally. You know, we're in the South compared to California, and there's often, you know, little digs sent across the country. Oh, they're from California. Oh, yeah, they're in the South, you know. So it's definitely very different. And each, you know, I mean, California has 60 million people, which is very hard to comprehend in Australia when we only have 27, 28 million in the whole country. So, yeah, fascinating differences to travel. And again, if you want to get out of your comfort zone, then traveling does that for you as well. So,
and the key there is that you had to get out of your comfort zone, and you had to go and somewhere you didn't know to start something that you wanted, and you had to mm-hmm. ask for it. So you have to ask mm-hmm. for it. You can't just go there and just think, oh, they're going to find me. You have to find them. You had to connect. So you had a contact. So connect with a contact who helps into something, ask that person, you know, to help. And then move from, like we said, California to Atlanta, like another country, mm-hmm. and do it again. And you don't get anything if you don't ask for it, or if you don't put your, because I can imagine when you think about it, that the 20-year-olds and 30-year-olds over in how many 250, how many million over in America?
330 something. Yeah. There's a total population. Yeah. 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 Third biggest country in the world by population. Yeah. It blew my mind when I heard that. Didn't even know.
I know, it's crazy. So if you're in your 20s and you want to make connections, you got that many more people that you have to try to connect with. You got to be more strategic about it.
Yeah. And more authentic. You have to know who you are, because there's more volume, which means more possibility. But the issue may not be finding the connection, it may be finding the right connection. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And then having the guts to just go and make a connection with them. And I remember like going to functions and things where the most important person in the room, who would be like a CEO or somebody like that, would often be standing by themselves.
Yeah.
And people wouldn't go up to them because they were too scared to go up to them. And, you know, it's like, those are the people that you go, anybody who's standing by themselves, go mm-hmm. up to them, because you never know. I used to make the best connections by going up to the person who was standing by themselves to say, how's it going? You know, and introduce myself, and then find out they were the CEO of some big company or something like that. And you go, why isn't anybody talking to you?
Yeah. And you know what I love about that as well, Judith, is like, even if they're not the CEO, because they might not be, but once you start talking in that sort of environment, you get a momentum going. And, you know, fear is often overcome by action through momentum. You take one step and another step, and then before you know it, the snowball is rolling down the hill and you're charming the whole room. But it started with you talking to that one guy in the corner, as you say. I love that. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, that one person might be even more important than the CEO. They might be the executive assistant to the CEO.
Or responsible for procurement.
Exactly right. So, you know, fighting that fear and going out of your comfort zone, we have to do that so much in everything that we do. And I think we actually have to do that even more these days. And I was reading this report by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, and it estimates there are 35 million missing entrepreneurs. So it says young people, women, and seniors have fewer opportunities to transform their business ideas into reality. They are faced with problems of access to finance, skills, and networks. So that really, really piqued my interest, because I thought, I think it's more about the networks.
I was going to say, so it's not just because VC dollars have dried up.
It's because if you have the networks, you can get the money. You know, if you have the right networks, people will support you. They'll back you. They'll fund you, that kind of stuff, if you have a good idea. And if they, but the networks are is very important. And I think that that is where the new generations are going to miss opportunities if they don't start developing those networks. And fear is, I think, preventing them from, because nobody wants to talk to you anymore. No one wants, they're not talking on the phone anymore. They're texting and they're emailing and they're not developing relationships face to face.
They're not developing in the moment skills, because texting, you can have a delay, you can think things through, you can, I mean, some people are just madly texting, but there's that delay. So that skill of being able to engage in the moment and have that conversation in the moment. I mean, some people would probably disagree, because you can be on discourse and you can be, you know, having the conversation through the keyboards, and they would say that I'm still having a conversation. But I think there are some challenges.
Well, I would jump in on that as well, Christina. I think when you are texting, you're filtering it through your mind, which can be a beautiful thing, you know, to have mindfulness and consider your thoughts and where does this thought come from. But I think we end up becoming too self-critical and trying to perfect our communication too much, instead of rolling with the sincerity that we have and the sincerity of trying to solve a problem and connect with someone. So I think it is a double-edged sword for sure, but we need to get out there and just try and trust in our communication more often. Yeah.
Yeah, and people are saying that they're missing the connection. There's, you know, a whole host of research now that's saying that people are craving connection. They're having interactions, but they're not connecting. And I think that comes back to partly what you were just saying.
Exactly. Now, the other thing is, how should people be training their kids to be future entrepreneurs? Because that's where it starts. And if they're not, because there's a direct correlation between being a risk taker when you're young to then being someone who will take risk when they're older. And so, you know, if you're not letting your kids do anything but look on devices, or you're not letting them go out and play and do things or fall, how are we going to change? How are parents going to alleviate that? How are they going to get them out there when they're cotton wooling them?
I see that quite a bit, because I do some work with schools, and I definitely see that. And I think we as humans have become too comfortable again, and we want to only have the good times and, you know, positive thinking and all that stuff, which is good, but I think we're too resistant to our own negative emotions, and we don't want to sit with our negative emotions enough to understand them and work through them. So instead we try and push them to the side and, you know, positive think our way out of it. That's a whole nother conversation.
Yeah.
But there's a quote that I love by Ira Glass about why most people don't become successful, especially as artists and creatives, is they have such a vision for themselves and such a taste for what they want, that the first time they try, they hate themselves. And I'm misquoting this, but the essence is there. They dislike what they have. They beat themselves up and they say, oh, I could never do this. This is not what I had in mind. It doesn't sound like what I want. And they give up. But persistence will get you through that. And I think it applies to the parents too. The parents give them the opportunity to explore something, their children. And then as soon as they see the child struggling, they're like, oh, my child's hurting. I don't want to let my child have pain. So they don't let them figure it out. They might solve the problem for them. I think we numb our kids with a lot of iPads and tablets and all sorts of things. It disgusts me and scares me when I see that, because we need to get them out there and get them tactile, playing with more board games and go back to crafts and using their different skills, getting out there and running, making something happen, you know, let them walk to a certain place around the corner if it's safe to do so. And, you know, just let that happen. It'll be okay. Like with the sharks, you know, the shark attack's pretty uncommon, but we avoid going to the beach because we just in case, you know, and risk is pretty subjective, but we have to let our children explore with the tools that we give them, give them the tools to learn to read, write, and communicate, and then sit back and just encourage them to figure it out themselves. That's how they'll get the job done. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
is this rescuing?
We used to walk to the store by ourselves as little kids, probably 6 or 7 years. Parents would get in trouble probably for that these days. But and I understand why parents would be afraid of doing that, given what they know, because our parents didn't know what dangers were and things like that. Yeah, just go up to the store, be home before the street lights turn on, that kind of thing. But you can still let your kid go to the store. They don't need to know that you're going to follow them.
Right, that's it. Yeah, or call the store. Hey, my son's on the way. You know, Billy, can you just keep an eye on John for me? Yeah, just let me know if he leaves or doesn't make
have
it.
Have the drone. You could have the drone. They won't know, but they're still going to the store.
Oh, you can hear the drone. Maybe, trust me.
Maybe there's a business idea in that, Judith. Maybe you should jump on that and get that entrepreneurial idea out before somebody else does.
That's right. My we can
call it helicopter parenting.
Yeah. I love that. I love it. Well, here's an idea right here. See? But here's a
someone take patient. It.
That's right. But, you know, it's true. The future, I do worry about the future of the kids, about taking those risks. They're going to be great in technology and everything else, AI and all that. But, you know, is AI going to help or hinder them? You know, mm-hmm. Is it going to, you know, hurt their creativity? They're going to have to think different ways. But regardless of what the tech is, they're still going to have social skills. They're still going to have anybody who is an entrepreneur, starts a business, whether it's now or in 10 years time, I believe, is still going to have the social skills and the ability to deal with a customer and understand the customer and have customer service. Because let's face it, customer service these days is terrible to you anymore.
I do think there'll be, you know, as much as we get concerned about AI taking over jobs and things like that, I do think there'll be a renaissance of sorts, like there has been with other jobs, you know, production lines and farm machinery and, you know, a lot of these jobs have been taken over every decade. There's been a new sort of industry that's been molded by new technology. But I think it will be a beautiful thing because it will force us to actually come back to these skills. You know, we don't have to be the world's best at mathematics anymore, but we still have to have a basic understanding. So when we fat thumb on our phone and we put the wrong calculation in, we can look at it and say, hang on, that doesn't look right. There's a whole extra digit there. So I do think we still need the skills to be able to understand it. And I think people will naturally come back to that. Instead of needing, you know, to garden and grow vegetable gardens for their whole family, we can just treat it more like an art form and have more fun with it, I think. So it won't be as much of a necessity to have these skills, but I do think it'll become more of a sport or an art form, perhaps, which I do see as a beautiful renaissance for a lot of these things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if you're a budding entrepreneur, you have to look at what is the problem to be solved and how mm-hmm. can I solve it? And am I passionate about this problem? Because you have to be passionate about it enough to spend virtually 24/7 for the rest of your life on your business. And then once you've decided what is the problem? I want to solve it. I'm passionate about it. How can I solve it? And I'm going to do it. Then that's the first step. And can I just say, OnlyFans account is not an entrepreneurial exercise.
A lot of people would disagree with you on that.
Well,
I think that's been a brilliant conversation, carrying across a whole range of different subject matters, from fear and entrepreneurship and customer service and raising children. Fabulous conversation. Been an absolute delight having you on our show. And we look forward to having future conversations with you.
Thanks,
absolutely.
Brett.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks,
appreciate
Brett.
You having me.
Thanks.
For more information about Every Step and our guests, head to everysteppodcast.com. To be notified of new podcasts, please subscribe via your favourite listening platform. And of course, follow us on social media and direct message us to share your ideas about guests or topics.